This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast.
And welcome back to Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Scalina.
And I'm your host, Matt Scalina.
And Matt, I should say host, but also realtors with Oakwin Realty in downtown Vancouver. Today, I am so fired up. We've got Tara Grunland. She is architect AIBC at GDP Architecture. She is back by popular demand discussing the sweeping zoning changes that happened in Bills 44, 46, and 47. And when she was here the first time, we didn't know how the municipalities would be implementing these changes. And now we're kind of past that June 30th deadline that the province had given the municipalities. And today we're going to unpack that. We're going to basically do a tour de region.
Yeah, exactly. A tour de region for sure. Tara was on in February talking about the provincial changes that were announced last November 2023. But like you said, Adam, each municipality had to June 30th to implement these changes. Each municipality, as we're going to see, has implemented them differently, some better, some worse. We'll save it for the show. But it's an interesting conversation for a few reasons. One, to kind of see the opportunities in the region. But, you know, as I think you point out in the show, to see how these zoning changes potentially impact the region and the growth of the region moving forward for decades to come. It's potentially a moment that a lot of people are not talking about. It is more important than we think.
Yeah, no, for sure it is, Matt. And we will discuss some of those takeaways at the end of the show. Stick around because I find that the first part of this conversation is really kind of a what, who, where, why kind of thing. And then we kind of get into
when as well. There's a when.
There's a when. A lot of W's. But here's the thing. By the end of the conversation, we are going full speed ahead and there's a lot of gems that come out of today's conversation.
It's rip roaring. That's for sure.
Absolutely. But before we get to that, Matt, of course, we've got the MLA Newswire Weekly. This is a pre-sale update brought to you by the MLA Canada Advisory Team. This headline this week is provincial government caps rents at 3% for 2025.
So Adam, as you mentioned, the BC government has come out with their rent increase cap for 2025. It's 3%. That's following 2024, which was 3.5%, and 2023, which was 2%. I just wanted to put it in historical context. Before the pandemic, rents were traditionally capped at inflation, whatever that number was, plus 2%. Right. Of course, the last couple of years have not, when we've seen, you know, inflation at 7, 8, 9%, this has not been the case for the last 3 years. That's for sure. 2025 is one of the lowest increases in rents for some time.
Yeah. And I mean, this is also coming at a time when, obviously, being a property owner, there are a lot of high costs and increasing costs. So when you think about this, you know, we are seeing property taxes increasing by 10 to 15%. Utilities are up by roughly 5%. Insurance costs have increased dramatically for homeowners, especially.
I don't even want to hear about it.
Well, yeah. And I mean, depending on the building, but, you know, considering premiums that you're paying with high water deductibles and et cetera. But to be fair, the costs for landlords has gone up dramatically in a region where the cash flow, as we know, even with 20% down, you know, you're typically at a deficit supporting properties. So it basically, this is also coming at a time when we've got some major changes to the Residential Tenancy Act that further restrict the landlord's rights around their property. And so this is all leading, at least MLA, this is the idea around the headline is that, you know, we're likely going to see challenges with investment capital money flowing into the market to help build and maintain new supply in the region. And I mean, we've talked about this on the show every year for the past almost decade of when the investor tap turns off, housing often doesn't get built. And then we find ourselves in this similar situation of always playing a catch-up game when it comes to increasing supply.
That's exactly it. I mean, according to MLA, what this means for the market is rent caps will likely reduce tenant turnover. People are not going to leave their properties because why would you when your rent doesn't match the market rent? Often you can't afford to, but tenant turnover is down. And challenges to capital flowing into to the region, like you said. So not very exciting news, honestly.
You're right, Matt. And if you like that, subscribe to the MLA Newswire. This is a daily email roundup of the latest real estate news and market insights. And you can visit mlacanada.com and subscribe today.
We are also sponsored by Scalina Real Estate. This is our real estate team here in Vancouver, Adam. And we got, we launched a couple new listings this week. We're optimistically heading into the fall market here.
Yeah. And we've got a lot of listings coming in the next couple of weeks. We're really excited to be launching some really beautiful properties for this fall market. And I feel like right now, Matt, I mean, we always talk about this, but end of August, first week back after Labor Day, everybody's kind of, you know, getting the kids back to school or shaking the cobwebs loose from a summer.
Or hearing about a quarter point decrease to the Bank of Canada interest rate.
Yeah. Which happened this morning, by the way. But, you know, and a lot of economists are anticipating two more this year. So, I mean, it's an interesting time, but I do feel like...
It's an interesting moment, for sure.
It is, yeah. I feel like the market is kind of gearing up, but I also feel like we're transitioning into the fall market and we're probably going to see more activity in the coming weeks. So that's really exciting. We do have one listing we're featuring for this week, which is really great. Can you talk about that, Matt?
Yeah, I wanted to highlight this property that's featured at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. It's unit 204-1005 West 7th. This is right in the heart of Fairview Slopes, a walking distance to the seawall, to VGH. It's a two-bedroom, two-bath, over 1,100 square feet, fully renovated, views of downtown and the North Shore Mountains. And Adam, I want to tell you about the outdoor space. Over 900 square feet. Okay, did you hear?
Yeah,
over 900 square feet.
I know the property, Matt. Don't tell me about the property. I know the property. But we are on the Broadway line as well. Mention that.
Yeah, we're on the Broadway line as well. this hit the market this week. We have open houses both days on the weekend. Very excited. Featured at 1.365. It's at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. Head over there to take a look. And while you're there, Adam, hit sell with us, because when you hit sell with us, you can download the sold plan, our most downloaded document of all time.
Yes, Matt. And like you said, we feature all of our listings at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. The sold plan is your step-by-step guide to get top dollar in the shortest amount of time for your property. If you're thinking about listing, it doesn't have to be this year. It can be any time in the future, but have a copy of this document. It really is a checklist, step-by-step guide for what to do to get your property ready for the market and to get listed.
Absolutely. But without further ado, maybe we should cut to our talk with Tara Grunland. This is a good one. Let's say information packed, but a lot of fun at the same time.
And where's your money going? Which market? Don't tell me. Save it for the end.
All right. Enjoy.
This podcast is sponsored by Marcon, a local family-owned and managed real estate development and construction company that's been around for nearly four decades. Marcon is not only committed to high-quality construction, but it also is making a positive impact in the communities in which it builds, all across the Lower Mainland.
We want to highlight two incredible Marcon projects. Elmwood, a 38-story tower located at Burquitlam's most important intersection, Como Lake Avenue and Clark Road. This landmark tower will feature 335 condominiums, over 37,000 square feet of office and retail space, and almost 20,000 square feet of amenity space. Elmwood has been incredibly popular with 80% sold currently, but they still have a great selection of junior one-bedroom all the way to three-bedroom homes remaining. Check out marcon.ca/elmwood for more.
And Matt, we are also excited about Soane House, Marcon's newest community in West Coquitlam, with 165 homes ranging from junior one-beds to three-beds.
Sonehouse offers the perfect West Coast aesthetic with a more nuanced Nordic-inspired design. Register today at marcon.ca/sonehouse. That's S-O-E-N-H-A-U-S. Or you can learn more at marcon.ca or follow them at Instagram at Marcon Homes.
Marcon, building for life.
Okay, so we're here with Tara Gronlund. She is an architect, AIBC at GDP Architecture. How you doing, Tara?
I'm fine. How are you guys?
Very well. Yeah, we should say past guest fan favorite. Thanks for coming back on the show,
Ooh,
Tara.
Okay. I didn't realize that. Okay.
Three more times and you get your five-timer jacket. Tara, maybe can you start by telling our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So I am a registered architect and the principal of GDP Architecture. GDP Architecture is a boutique architecture firm located in Vancouver. We do work throughout the Metro Vancouver region, up in the Okanagan, Vancouver Island. We've had projects all over BC. We primarily focus on residential projects, ranging from single-family residences up to multi-family developments. So what we're talking about today, the small-scale multi-unit housing, is kind of our niche and something that we deal with in our office every day.
Yeah, Tara. So we had you on at the start of the year. I think it was in February when the province came out with a couple of bills, Bill 44, 46, and 47. They gave all the municipalities, they basically said, okay, here's some changes that everyone has to make. You have till June 30th to make these changes, to implement this new policy. And we said, hey, we'll have to have you back on once this has been implemented. We wanted to bring you back on today specifically to talk about Bill 44, because that's the small scale multiplex development. Can you start maybe by re-explaining what the legislation is for those who weren't here the first go around or don't remember?
Absolutely. Well, the first go around, we focused our conversation on the city of Vancouver and the multiplex regulations that had come into place in the city of Vancouver. So Bill 44 is actually provincial legislation. So it's a bit, there's overlap, but it's a different kind of envelope, what we're talking about today. So in November of last year, so November 2023, the province enacted Bill 44, 46, and 47, Bill 44 being the small-scale multi-unit housing bill. A lot of people are calling it SHMU. You've probably heard that. I'm on the fence about calling it SHMU. I think it sounds ridiculous. But anyways, that is what people are calling it. And that provincial legislation, the aim of the provincial legislation was to enable 4 to 6 units to be developed on all single family and duplex zoned properties in the province. That's what the province's aim was. So in Bill 44, the province defined what were called restricted zones in which this bill would apply to. So restricted zones, at the time of the enactment of the bill, a restricted zone was a zone that limited the number of dwelling units on a parcel. And in urban areas, that meant that it encapsulated all single family zones that were permitted to have a secondary suite or a laneway house and duplex zones. So the province wanted all the municipalities who had restricted zones to update their zoning bylaws to reflect new development parameters that would allow more dwelling units to be built on those restricted zoned properties. And in rural zones, it's a bit different. Rural zones being communities under 5,000, et cetera, they wanted, if it wasn't already allowed, to allow for at least 2 units. So it was a sliding scale of density, I guess you could say, depending on where the lot is located. So the province enacted this, and like you said, Matt, they gave everybody, all the municipalities, a deadline of the end of June to integrate these policies into their own zoning bylaws. So every municipality was given these very defined parameters. So the parameters were, and I'm going to concentrate on urban areas because that's where we're really talking about, right? So in urban areas, what this meant was if there was a restricted zone, the province wanted municipalities to permit up to 3 units on lots that were less than 280 square meters or about 3,015 square feet to allow for 3 units on those kinds of properties. Then to allow for 4 units on properties that were larger than 280 meters squared. And then finally to allow 6 units on properties that were over 280 meters squared and within proximity of what they defined as a prescribed bus stop. So a prescribed bus stop is bus stops that had a certain level of frequency throughout the day and over the course of a week. So if you were within the parameters or within the distance allocated by the province, if your lot was within a certain distance of a prescribed bus stop, you then should be allowed to build 6 units on those properties. So what this means in the vast majority of cases in, let's say, Metro Vancouver, for the most part, it's 4 to 6 units. And if you are in other areas like, you know, Kelowna, some smaller cities that don't have extensive transit networks, most of those municipalities would most likely be limited to 4 units per lot. So the province gave these parameters. They published a guiding document to help municipalities craft their zoning changes. So they gave suggestions on how to make these changes. So they gave suggested, you know, heights, setbacks, different kinds of siting ideas, etc., but left it up to the municipalities on how they wanted to implement the regulations. So while the province gave everybody the same parameters, what every municipality did to implement those parameters is completely different.
So Tara, I just have a quick question, because one thing before we went live, we were talking about, you know, how confusing, and I guess it's all new this year, but how confusing it is. You actually used the term patchwork a number of times. And one thing that strikes me is that part of this was, it seemed, to simplify things, right? Wasn't that like some of the goal was, okay, we're going to do like a provincial-wide upzoning of single-family lots. And at least from my recollection, it was like, okay, it's going to be easier to understand and easier to implement. But it sounds like this is everything but.
Well, I can't say that the aim of the provincial legislation was to make things easier. It was to help facilitate more density. The aim was to help to facilitate more housing being built, making things easier in some ways. Yes, some of their recommendations, and some municipalities have simplified their zoning bylaws. But given that all municipalities have their own zoning bylaws anyways, every municipality is different in how it's crafted, the parameters that it designates, and all this kind of stuff, right? So to overlay an overriding policy is very difficult because every municipality is different in what they have existing in their policies. And so making it simpler, yeah, they were encouraging municipalities to simplify zoning, and many municipalities have in the last, you know, go around of changes simplified things, which does make things easier. But given that it's different from municipality to municipality, the way it has always been, that's just how zoning is, it's up for debate whether it's made it easier or not. One of the aims, though, that you're probably alluding to, Matt, is the elimination of the need to go through a rezoning process in order to do a multifamily development. So that is one of the aims that the provincial legislation was trying to address by enacting this kind of legislation, is that now if you want to do a multifamily project on a single family zoned property, even if maybe the municipality would have been open to it before, now you don't need to necessarily go through a rezoning because it's zoned for you to do that. So it simplifies the process, right? You don't have to necessarily go through a development permit process or a rezoning process. You can just go straight to a building permit. So again, though, that's a patchwork. So whether the province has been successful in simplifying things, I don't know. But
you know, and just before we get to the various implementations, do you have a sense, and I know, of course, Tara, you're an architect, you're not a political observer or whatever else that you may need to be to answer this question, but have the municipalities been excited to implement these changes in your view, or has it been, you know, being dragged, kicking and screaming? Or is it varied across the metro area?
I have to be careful with what I say here, but I think it has been varied. Some municipalities, I mean, we all know what happened in West Van. That was in the news recently. They refused to implement the legislation. They were the only municipality in the province that refused. And the province then legislated them to have to make the changes within 30 days. So yes, West Van kicking and screaming. Other municipalities, I think, have been frustrated with the process because there wasn't a lot of consultation. So, you know, that's a whole other, yes, political debate about, you know, should the province be stepping into zoning? It's traditionally been an area where they have been hands-off, letting the municipalities craft what they deem is appropriate and have the planners who are the most knowledgeable about the municipality craft what is appropriate for their city in terms of zoning. But at the end of the day, the province has the legal right. They have every right to enact this kind of legislation. So that is what has been done. So the municipalities, whether they are in agreement or not, they're legislated to legally oblige. So that's kind of where we're at. Some municipalities, I think, have kind of gone all in and see the need and are in agreement. Other municipalities, less so.
Well, maybe it's a good time to talk about implementation then. So it sounds like there's some similarities across the Metro Vancouver region, but as many differences in terms of how these guidelines have been implemented. So I don't know, does it make sense to run through, go municipality by municipality?
Sure. Yes, we can do that. Absolutely. So one thing I'm going to say, a big disclaimer before we go through all of this, is that this is a Coles Notes overview version of the implementation. You really need, if you are curious about the development potential of an individual lot, you need to do your due diligence and confirm all of the information that is applicable to your particular instance. Contact an architect. They should be able to assist you. Reach out to the municipality. They are the only ones who can give you detailed information. Some municipalities have updated website information. Other ones are still doing that. So again, the information that's out there is sometimes incorrect or not complete. So just make sure that you do your due diligence and do your own checking into all of these things about your particular instance. Because one thing that I will say is that within the provincial legislation, there were exemptions that cities could apply to their zoning changes. So there were situations that municipalities would not be obligated to make the zoning changes. So say, for instance, if a property was in a floodplain, if it was on a steeply sloped lot and slope stability, it would be an issue. Some areas that are really close to heavily forested areas, like some of the areas on the North Shore, are actually exempt because of slope stability and forest fire issues. So all of those kinds of things add a whole other level of nuance to the regulations. And so it is different for every particular property throughout the province.
Okay.
So having said that then, so let's start with Vancouver, City of Vancouver. So as we discussed in the last podcast, the city of Vancouver, before the provincial legislation came into effect, enacted their R11 zone, their multiplex zoning, which we talked about in the last podcast in detail, that permitted up to 6 units on single family zoned lots in the city that were accessible by a lane, etc. So because that was in place before Bill 44 was enacted, the vast majority of properties in the city of Vancouver were not affected by Bill 44. They were not deemed as the restricted zones because they already allowed for multifamily housing. So that goes for other kinds of zones in the city, like a lot of the RT zones that did already allow for multifamily projects of some description. They were exempt. But there were a couple of zones, and that's primarily the RT7 and RT9 zone in Kitsilano and the First Shaughnessy District zone were caught in the envelope of the Bill 44 regulations. So the City of Vancouver has enacted changes to those zones to allow for multifamily development. In the case of First Shaughnessy, the FSR is lower than everywhere else because those properties are very large, etc. So that is a change compared to other properties, but they did proceed to make changes in the City of Vancouver. Burnaby, out of all the municipalities in the Lower Mainland, Burnaby is the one that really went all in with the changes. They have enacted quite sweeping changes at taking all of their single family zones and changing them to a new zone, which is R1 SSMUH. And now all of those zones are permitted to have, again, a sliding scale depending on the size of the property, whether it's within proximity of a transit stop, but you are permitted to do multiplex projects within all of the new R1 SSMUH zones, ranging from 3 to 6 units. Now, the City of Burnaby has also removed all FSR requirements. So what they have done is they are crafting the parameters in which a multifamily project can happen based on height, setbacks, and site coverage. So they've kind of taken a different tact with this and have been very liberal as well in the number of configurations that you can start looking at to achieve multifamily projects. It doesn't have to be 6 units in one building. It can be row houses. It can be over 2 buildings. It can be any number of forms. So they've been very liberal in their interpretation. They've also not set any regulations around tenure. So projects can be stratified or they can be rental. So again, very liberal interpretation of the regulations. And we're already seeing a lot of interest in Burnaby properties for development because of this. And there's also no development permit process for multifamily projects under the R1 SSMUH zone. So that again simplifies the process in Burnaby. So moving on, New Westminster. New Westminster, the majority of the single family zone properties in New West already permitted a secondary suite and a laneway house. So technically, they already were able to permit 3 units per property. And in those cases, those kinds of zones were not deemed as provincially defined restricted zones. So technically, the City of New West did not need to make any changes to those zones at all, and they have opted not to. So in the City of New West, they only made a few minor changes to some of their duplex zones. They also have initiated an infill housing study program that they are aiming in the next couple of years to potentially allow up to 6 units on every single property, duplex or single family zone property in New West. But they may be putting rental restrictions on it, et cetera. This is all up for debate. So they did implement the changes that were required for duplex. There are a few little things that have fallen through the cracks in New West, to be honest. There's one zone that should have been altered to allow for multifamily projects, and they did not make changes. They've said that we're doing this infill housing program, and they have submitted that to the province. So we'll see what the province comes back with. I'm going to back up here for a second. So what happened with the Bill 44 is all the municipalities were given until the end of June to implement their changes. Then they had to send to the province documentation about how they have implemented all of the legislation into their zoning bylaws. All of those changes are now sitting with the province for review. What the review looks like is undetermined. The timeline of the review is undetermined, etc. So I'm not sure where that leaves things that have fallen through the cracks in various municipalities.
Thinking about Vancouver, Burnaby, and New West, apart from the things that have fallen through the cracks, those changes say that Burnaby made are now on the books. People can actually move forward with those plans.
Oh, yeah. It's enacted. It's there. It's all in place. All of the zoning has been changed. The new regulations in the city of Burnaby, for instance, they actually have updated all of their online information there. I believe their online mapping even has, you can pull up the individual lot and it'll tell how many units you are permitted to develop under the new zone. So yeah, they have really gone all in.
So just to think kind of broadly about the three so far, Vancouver, as we talked about in February, it kind of had already moved ahead with these changes. So they didn't really have to do much except for, you know, that the duplex zoning in Kits and the Shaughnessy zoning.
Yeah.
New West didn't have to do much, it sounds like. And
no, they didn't.
Yeah. But Burnaby, on the other hand, seems to have fully transformed their zoning process.
Absolutely. And to be honest, I mean, I think there are going to be a lot of multifamily projects built in Burnaby in the next while because of the new regulations that they put into place. So
it's so interesting to think of Burnaby over the last 10 years, and not to derail the conversation, or 10 years, 15 years, however long it would be, where the Brentwood Town Center vision came into effect and the Lougheed Town Center and Metro Town. And they seem so ahead of the curve in a lot of ways compared to other municipalities when it comes to high rise. And now it sounds like they're doing the same when it comes to small scale multiplexes. They're getting ahead of the curve, making things easy. And I know developers years ago said they loved Burnaby, in relation to Vancouver, but it sounds like here that's probably going to be the same for small scale builders.
It sounds like it. I mean, having said that, I mean, Vancouver has made pretty sweeping changes, you know, so things have gotten easier in Vancouver as well. They've simplified so many things with the zoning changes that they made last year. So yeah, things are evolving, and Burnaby is looking very attractive to a lot of people.
What about the Tri-Cities?
Okay, so Tri-Cities. Coquitlam has asked for an extension. Within the Bill 44 legislation, municipalities were given the ability to ask for an extension to implementation of the regulations if they had some reasoning behind it. And Coquitlam did apply and was granted 1-year extension. So nothing has changed in Coquitlam. Port Coquitlam has implemented changes. They have, on the vast majority of their properties, which were zoned RS1 to RS4 in Port Coquitlam, they have changed it so you can build a single-family residence or a duplex. And then with a single-family residential building, you can build a secondary suite and an accessory dwelling unit, so a laneway house or something like that. That goes with duplexes as well. And then in order to get the 6 units on lots that were supposed to be permitted to have 6 units, they're allowing a triplex configuration with secondary suites. So they've kind of taken a different approach, and they're a bit more prescriptive in how you can start implementing the configurations to get to the unit numbers that can be achieved. The rationale there, I'm not sure, but that's their strategy. And then what they have done is they have a sliding scale of FAR, depending on the kind of project that you're proposing, ranging from 0.5 for a single family house, which is fairly normal, up to 1.0 for these triplexes with secondary suites to get the 6 units. So again, a sliding scale. It's a patchwork of what is appropriate for your for the size of lot and for the proximity to the prescribed bus stop.
Hey, everyone. Pardon the interruption. We just want to take a quick minute to thank the following sponsors who make this show possible.
This podcast is sponsored by Common Ground Consulting.
Are you developing in the Lower Mainland? Common Ground Consulting is a development management and consulting company with experience in single family, townhouses, multifamily, and commercial developments.
What I love about Common Ground, Adam, is they manage the whole development process, from due diligence and feasibility reports for initial purchase of land to completing rezoning, development permits, and building permits.
They streamline the whole process with strong relationships with sub-consultants and municipalities and a deep understanding of all city requirements.
Common Ground Consulting. Feasibility and efficiency prioritized every step of the way.
Learn more at commonground-consulting.com or 604-807-6419.
We are also sponsored by Oakwin Realty. This is our real estate brokerage, best brokerage in the city, hands down. If you are in the industry, a new agent, an aspiring agent, somebody just looking to make a change, new culture, new energy, new resources, head over to oakwin.com/join, type in VRP 2020. That's oakwin.com/join, type in VRP 2020. Not only do you get to meet Michael Morgan and the gang, the bigwigs over at Oakwin, you get a huge incentive for first going to oakwin.com/join, typing in VRP 2020.
Port Moody has also implemented changes. So a number of their single family zones have been altered to allow for small-scale multi-unit possibilities. They do have on their online mapping all of this detailed, so that's really helpful. And they have also permitted a number of different kinds of configurations in order to get to that unit number. So again, this is something that if you're in Port Moody and have a property, you have to look at the specifics there on what would be applicable for your property, given the size and depth and et cetera, on what kind of configuration would be possible. Again, a sliding scale of FAR ranging from 0.7 for 3 dwellings, and then you add 0.1 for each additional dwelling unit up to a maximum of 1.0. So all these municipalities, Port Moody and Port Coquitlam, are the same in terms of the 1.0 max. It's the equivalent in Vancouver, I should say, of what you can do with multiplexes in Vancouver.
Is there, like, when you just, and I know we're looking at these in broad terms, and this is maybe an unfair question, Tara, but probably every question I'm going to ask is like, if you look at, and I know we'll take Coquitlam out, but say, so Port Moody and Port Coquitlam, does one of these strike you as like, okay, this is a much more attractive municipality to work with? Or is it just like, okay, there's just different rules and, you know, as long as you understand them, one or the other, it doesn't much matter.
Right. I don't know the answer to that, to be honest. Some of the municipalities, we've taken a deep dive into the zoning regulations and have started projects and feasibility studies and things like that. Have not done that for Port Coquitlam and Port Moody to date. So I cannot speak about the nuts and bolts. Because sometimes, you know, at first glance, oh, this looks pretty good. But then when you actually get into the details, there are some roadblocks or restrictions or what have you that are not as liberal as you initially anticipated. So I can't speak for Port Coquitlam and Port Moody in terms of the comparison between the two. It could just be that they're different, or one may turn out to be much more amenable to development than the other. I don't know the answer to that one. All of this is so new that, you know, any projects are really in the infancy stages of planning and development so far. So, of course, nothing has been built yet. These are all the regulations are way too new. So I think that will come with time. And as projects start getting developed and built, then we'll start seeing. And then, you know, there's a whole other slew of stuff that comes into play, of course, with any development that we're not talking about is, you know, development charges and fees and all kinds of other restrictions and components that go into weighing in, is this a successful project or not, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that's outside my realm of operation, but it's a bigger picture envelope in which all those things operate in, of course.
Well, we've talked about Vancouver, we've talked about Burnaby, Tri-Cities. Should we go into the Valley?
Well, wait, should we circle back? And I was thinking we kind of missed North Van and Richmond.
Let's go to the North Shore. Okay, so the North Shore, West Van, as you know, refused to implement the regulations, so they had their hands slapped. And ironically, though, the vast majority of properties in West Van were not deemed as a restricted zone to begin with. Because in West Van, all of the single-family residential zones were already permitted to build a secondary suite and a laneway house. That means that they were exempt from all of this legislation. So West Van took a stand, but they took a stand on very few properties, really. So how they have implemented the regulations on those few properties, I'm not up to speed on, so I can't comment on that. I do know that they did make some changes, though. The city of North Van, similarly, the vast majority of their city of North Van, it's RT1 and RT2, single family and duplex zoned properties were already permitting three units, so they were all exempt. And for all of the other zones within the city of North Van, they have asked for an extension from the province. So nothing has really changed in the city of North Van. The district of North Van did enact changes. However, the changes, when you look at them, are actually not in compliance with the provincial legislation, at least the way I look at them. So we'll see what the province does with the review. What they ended up doing is they had three actual options that they had the planners propose to council, three different zoning change options. And the council voted in the least progressive of all of them and is questionable whether it's actually in adherence to the provincial legislation. So we'll let the province decide on that. It's gone to them for review. But what they have done is they've essentially now enabled all single family zones to have a laneway house and a secondary suite. But they were really, by provincial legislation, supposed to be doing more than that. So we'll see where that ends up. They certainly have not permitted six units on any of their properties in their changes.
What about Richmond?
Richmond did implement changes, except for Steveston. They did ask for an extension for the Steveston neighborhood. I'm not sure exactly what the rationale was behind why they wanted an extension, but they were granted it. So they did implement changes. So they are allowing multiplex projects of varying unit sizes, depending on the size of the property. They did, however, keep FAR restrictions. And when you do look at the nuts and bolts of what Richmond has enacted, I think it's going to be hard pressed to possibly get multifamily projects getting built in Richmond because their FARs are quite low compared to some of the other municipalities. So they kind of came out and said, they're enacting this, but they've also, it appears anyways, been giving a little bit of pushback to the province in how they've kind of crafted what they have said, wanting to encourage smaller, they say, house-like development that's more complementary to the scale of Richmond's traditional single-family and duplex neighborhoods. So they've kind of implemented what they had to. They appear to be, in my view, in compliance. So we'll see what the province does. The province didn't have a prescribed way that people or that municipalities had to implement this. So, you know, Richmond has made changes. So that's what they were required to do.
But sorry, when they've made changes to kind of meet at a bare minimum the requirements, is there any instance in which somebody can build six units on a property in Richmond?
Yes. But when you look at the floor area ratio or the floor space ratio, I'm not sure what Richmond uses. It's quite low. So yeah, you can build six units.
Just doesn't make sense.
Who wants to build six 500 square foot units? Just throwing that number out there. I don't know. But you know, you're probably not going to get very many people wanting to do those kinds of developments because they're not as feasible. I mean, I'm not a developer. I shouldn't be saying this, but you know, at the same time, I see what kind of the aims of developers want with these kinds of projects. And it may be difficult to achieve in Richmond because of the FARs that they've set.
Can you remind us, Tara, because that seems like the kind of the rub here, right? Like the floor space ratio allowance. What did the province in their, back when they introduced this legislation in November, have anything along those lines? Or it was just like 6 units?
No, they didn't. It's just about density. So it's just about number of units. That's what this is about. It's number of units. They published a planning manual that was supplied to all the municipalities to help implement the changes. Within that manual, they did give recommendations, but the municipalities were not obligated to follow those recommendations. And the recommendations did not include FAR.
Interesting.
So again, how municipalities have chosen to implement this has rightfully been, you know, like it was given to them to figure out how they wanted to implement it. And municipalities have implemented things differently.
I'm really excited to get to Surrey and Chilliwack and the rest of the valley here.
Okay.
Well,
okay.
But you know what? Okay. Maybe Tara, before you go, just for fun, maybe I'll just put this to Adam. You think Surrey's good or bad on this? How do you think they...
I think Surrey is... I think if we're thinking about Metro Vancouver, I think they're on more of the Burnaby approach.
And White Rock?
More of the Steveston approach, man.
Okay.
Interesting. You know what? You guys are wrong.
Oh!
We actually should have made a game of this. From the very beginning, we should have had a quiz format for all of this. But anyways, so Surrey did implement changes. So they are permitting up to 6 units. They have various configurations that you can do over 2 buildings, etc. So it's all very liberal in terms of their interpretation. There's no development permit process. The one thing that Surrey kind of said in a lot of their documentation around their rationale and behind how they implemented the regulations is that Surrey is a bit unlike a lot of municipalities. And it is true. A lot of Surrey doesn't have lanes. They have a lot of cul-de-sacs and, you know, wedge-shaped properties and odd configurations that don't exist in a lot of the other municipalities within Metro Vancouver. So when you talk about access to properties, parking, all of this kind of thing, when you don't have a lane, it starts getting a little bit more difficult to manage, etc. So in Surrey's interpretation, they have enacted all of the changes, it appears to me, to be in compliance. However, it does appear that their FARs are on the low side. So say, for instance, in their one main zone, they have a sliding scale where you have a certain FSR calculation on a certain square footage and then a different FSR calculation for anything beyond that. So it's 0.6 on the first X number of square feet, and then it's 0.3 on the remainder. And I haven't looked at Surrey in detail, but I think you're going to end up with FSRs that are lower than some of the other municipalities that have implemented the 1.0 FSR for multiplex projects of 6 units. So I think Surrey, while they're allowing it, I think you're going to end up with smaller projects. Again, I haven't dived into the nuts and bolts of Surrey, but that's what it appears.
So Surrey kind of falls closer to Richmond than to Burnaby.
Yep. It does appear. White Rock has implemented changes, and they've actually implemented what they call, they're now allowing what's called houseplexes in White Rock is what they're calling it, up to 6 units. Again, a sliding scale of FAR, FSR, depending on the lot size and the number of units that you're aiming for. But in the city of White Rock, you're allowed as high as 1.25.
Wow.
FSR.
Who would have guessed?
So again, you have to look at the nuts and bolts of this, what's included in that number, what's excluded, etc. And I, you know, it's way too nuanced of a conversation to have. But at first glance, it's looking like they've been very liberal with their implementation.
But what about Chi-Town, Chilliwack?
You know what? I haven't looked at Chilliwack, so I cannot comment on Chilliwack.
And Mission? What are your thoughts on Mission? we're skipping some.
Yeah, we are skipping some.
Well, okay, so Langley applied for a one-year extension. So Langley hasn't made any changes yet. Abbotsford implemented changes. It looks like in Abbotsford, because of the lack of bus infrastructure, the majority of properties there would only be allowed to have a maximum of 4 units, but they have implemented changes. The implementation that they have pursued as well is they put some restrictions on tenure. So they're only allowing non-stratified multiplex projects. So they're wanting to encourage rental projects.
Tara, can we talk a little bit about the tenure? Like, so how many municipalities had the tenure approach?
That's an interesting question. Abbotsford seems to be the only one that put really strict tenure.
And Vancouver seems to...
Vancouver doesn't have any restrictions.
No restrictions on the sixplex.
But it incentivizes, right?
Right.
They incentivizes rentals because you're actually allowed 8 units if
right.
you have secured market rental projects. So again, different approaches depending on the municipality. Now, having said that, when you look at things, municipalities like the District of North Van, because of what they've done in that they're only allowing a single family dwelling, a secondary suite, and a laneway house, well, that has impacted tenure because secondary suites and laneway houses can't be stratified, right? So they are trying to limit the kind of projects that are being built there. Burnaby, I know, doesn't have restrictions on tenure.
Tara, is it a fair characterization to position this as many municipalities coming up with interesting ways to essentially say, yes, we've complied, but basically put in the poison pill as frequently as they can to not, in the spirit of the laws not actually being implemented?
Yeah, I understand. I understand what you're saying. And I don't know if it's a poison pill. I mean, within Bill 44, the municipalities were given a lot of leeway because, you know, it's not a one-size-fits-all solution here, right? So the provincial legislation was a very blunt instrument, and it's a very kind of all-encompassing big picture instrument. But every municipality does have its own issues, its own concerns, its own aims, and they were given the power to craft the zoning bylaws to address their own issues. So yes, it might be what you would classify as a poison pill if they're putting restrictions on the kind of tenure or the FAR or whatever, but they weren't legislated to have to change those things.
Mm-hmm.
They were given the power to put limitations on the tenure if they saw fit, right? Now, whether the province is going to go back and, you know, review Richmond and say, hey, yeah, this is a poison pill, we're not going to allow that, I can't comment on that. That's really up to the province. The province is supposed to be reviewing the implementation. So what's going to come out of all of that remains to be seen.
Is there, in your mind, just looking at, so we've covered almost the entirety of Metro Vancouver, does this lead to a significant amount of housing being built across the entire Lower Mainland in the next, say, 5 to 10 years? Or is this kind of optics and painful changes and nothing much else?
Well, I'm not a developer. I can't really comment on that. But all I can say is that right now, there is a lot of interest in this. There is a lot of interest by developers to do these kinds of smaller projects. And a lot of it is not necessarily, how do I put it? I think we might see a lot of small-scale developers who did the single family houses and the duplexes jumping up to doing multiplexes now, because maybe that is going to become more of the norm. It's hard to say. Multiplexes still are more complicated buildings to build in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll see what the uptick is. They're more complicated, they're more expensive. So I don't know. The developers are going to have to do the metrics on that. And I can say that there has been a lot of interest coming into our office anyway.
I mean, this isn't something for Tara, but more something I've just been thinking about. It's kind of like this experiment that we're watching unfold where you're going to be seeing these houses. Like, does opting out or taking the more modest approach, I guess, to change, keep an area exclusive to some extent? Or does Burnaby's option of adding more density win the day by creating a more vibrant community? I mean, it's an interesting time.
It is. And I think time will only tell. You know, we're going to have to see how these regulations play out, whether also municipalities are going to start tweaking them as time goes on. I mean, zoning documents are fluid documents. They change over time. So if, for instance, municipalities have implemented changes and they're not getting any projects coming in and they want projects, maybe they will start making changes. Who knows? Time will tell.
It is interesting to think, though, that this, I guess, any zoning change, but something as sweeping as this does have the, you know, the potential to kind of shift the course of the region.
Yes. Well, I think in the last number of years, there has been a big shift, not just in, let's say, the provincial attitude towards this and everything, but I think generally, and you guys maybe can speak to this too, is that generally, I think the appetite for density in our city is changing. There's less NIMBYism out there than there was in the past. More people are becoming kind of open to the possibilities of seeing changes in our city than ever before. And as an architect, I think density brings vibrance to a neighborhood. You know, it brings amenities to a neighborhood. It offers a lot of positive things that our city could benefit from. And we have a lot of room to add density in Vancouver. We do. And I think that kind of mindset is changing. I mean, I don't know if you guys are the same, but I mean, so many people, you know, they look at their kids and are they ever going to be able to afford to buy a place in Vancouver or in our lifetime, or, you know, or even, you know, people coming to the city who want to stay here and we need housing. Whether this is the answer or not, I don't know. Time will tell, but I think it's a component of it anyways, hopefully. And one other thing to add is I think also the big thing is that none of these changes means that neighborhoods are going to have full-blown changes tomorrow, right? These are incremental changes. You're going to see multiplexes popping up throughout the metro region all over the place, I think. And that's no different than what duplexes did decades ago, right? And now we don't think twice about it.
Right.
So it's not like, you know, everyone on your block tomorrow is going to build a multiplex. That's not the reality of the situation. These are going to be small incremental changes.
Well, the definition of gentle density, essentially, right? But
exactly.
But meaningful, if it's implemented correctly, I think meaningful amount of new housing that creates vibrancy in neighborhoods.
Yeah.
I'm just worried about my parking situation.
Matt's going to have to, you're going to have to get a couple more pylons, Matt.
I'm fighting with all my neighbors already. This is challenging.
Okay, well, we're getting off topic here, but interestingly enough, you know, the city of Vancouver, I don't know if you guys know this, but was it last month or the city of Vancouver removed all parking requirements for residential? Well, actually, no, not for residential, for everything.
For everything, yeah.
Right.
Now, it doesn't mean that developments aren't going to have parking because parking is desirable. It just means that they're removing the requirement for certain numbers and various other things. That's all.
Long overdue. No kidding.
Well, a lot of people think so, yes. And I think it will spur on development. And, you know, there is a debate about this. Some municipalities with the small-scale multi-unit housing have initiated changes with their parking bylaws to be more in sync. Some haven't. So again, a patchwork across the city on how this has affected parking too. One other thing I'm going to throw in is there's also, and we didn't talk about today, there's also the Bill 47, the Transit-Oriented Area Bill that the provincial government enacted at the same time as Bill 44. And what that was about was, legislating that municipalities had to not deny projects based on height and density within certain distances from SkyTrain stations and certain prescribed bus loops. So that's also another layer of complication to all of the stuff that we're talking about right now, because again, a patchwork through the city about how the overlap between the TOA areas and the small-scale multi-unit housing legislation, how that's being implemented in various municipalities. So that's other kind of another layer that people need to become aware of and check out in terms of how that may impact the development potential of a property.
Well, maybe we'll leave it there, Tara, but we do have this segment called the Five Wire, five lighthearted questions that we end every show with. Can you stick around for that?
Okay. Yes, I can.
We've got a modified version because we had you on the show recently.
This podcast is brought to you by Spark, the new development sales and marketing platform.
Adam, the stakes have never been higher for launching a condo project, and today's developers and brokerage teams need to leverage the best tools in order to hit their financing thresholds and to sell out their projects.
Spark is an all-in-one sales and marketing software that includes a comprehensive CRM, inventory management, email marketing, and digital contracts. These tools are custom tailored to the pre-sale process to help you capture leads, increase inventory yield, and transact contracts seamlessly.
And here's the best part, Adam. Spark's team is headquartered right here in Yale Town, and they have over 10 years of experience in helping BC-based developers and brokers bring their projects to market.
So if you're selling a new development, you need to check out Spark at spark.re/VREP. That's spark.re/VREP. And remember, Matt, you can't light the pre-sale world on fire without a spark.
So question number one is, what is your number one travel destination?
My number one travel, well, I don't travel very much, so I don't really have a number one, but I would say, well, my next travel destination, hopefully, will be Vienna, Austria, because that's where my son lives. And hopefully that will be my next travel destination.
Very cool. What is one piece of advice, Tara, you would give your 18-year-old self?
Okay, well, in keeping with the theme of your podcast,
by Burnaby,
my 18-year-old self would say, buy real estate in the city of Vancouver as quickly as possible. There you go.
What's the saying?
Because I'm older than you guys. I'm older than you guys. That would have been really economical.
Yeah. Okay. Question number three. Here's a new one. You find yourself on death row, Tara. What is your last meal?
Oh gosh. What in the world did I do to get on death row? It would probably either involve something with seafood and butter, or
fair enough.
You know, a decadent meal from Tojo, sushi, or you know, like something like that. That's where I'm at.
Nice. Okay. Well, here, something that you have purchased for under $1,500 recently that's had a positive impact on your life.
You asked me this last time.
You know, though, it's been a few months.
I know. What have I purchased that has? Okay. This is well under $1,500, but the biggest purchase for me over the summer that has transformed my gardening, which I garden a lot in my own yard, and I'm really into gardening. I purchased a small chainsaw, which has transformed my pruning existence in my own yard. There, that's the weirdest probably answer that you've ever gotten to that question, a chainsaw. But that's my answer.
I feel there's somebody else who's been on the show. Was it, I think it might have been Bo Jarvis. I can't remember who. Anyway, somebody else was talking about tools for their yard as
gardening
as,
tools.
Yeah, that okay. Really, well, hey, that helped them improve their life immensely. That's for sure. Oh, it sounds like something my wife would say.
It sounds silly, but when you're a gardener, tools are everything.
Yeah.
Tools are everything. So, anyways, that's my answer.
Amazing. Well, Tara, how can people find more about what you're up to and, of course, GDP architecture?
visit www.gdparchitecture.ca. There's lots of ways to contact us on our website, and all of our contact information is there.
Well, fantastic. Yeah, well, thanks for putting in the legwork here, Tara. That was a around-the-world trip that was useful.
And, you know, this is, like I said, Coles Notes versions. This is a really blunt overview of everything. So the nuts and bolts of particular instances really need to be investigated.
So there you have it, folks, our discussion with GDP Architecture's Tara Grunlund.
You know, always appreciate Tara coming on the show. Second appearance, talking about zoning, very complicated topic. And I got to say, here's the thing about it, is that if you go online and you start looking at various websites throughout the region, or in this space, I should say, that are telling you what you can and cannot do with certain lots in the region, I should say, it is mind-boggling. There's a lot of bad information out there. And I really appreciate Tara taking the time to just, you know, talking about what we know as opposed to, you know, what we think's going to happen or guessing.
What I was going to say is, even if you have the most accurate information, it's hard to kind of wrap your head around it, let alone all the bad information out there. So it was nice having that, the general flyby overview of the region. What's going on? Where's exciting? Where's not so exciting? Yeah, just great having her back on the show, and really appreciated that breakdown.
Yeah, and it's like anything, Matt. I mean, anyone who's built in the region or done major renovations knows that there's still always the process and the guidelines that you have to go to make sure that what you want to do with a property, you can actually do it. So there's information out there, but definitely get in touch with an architect if you are pursuing something, because
yeah, maybe
you might be surprised. You might be pleasantly surprised, or you might be upset if you're out of your due diligence process. So something to keep in mind. Matt, what else do we have for today before we cut?
What else do we have, Adam? We have VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. This is our website where all things real estate related live, including the back catalog. Head over to VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com for things like the LiveWire. This is our weekly mailer where you'll see access to VIP presale deals. It's an interesting moment, not only in the market, but also in the presale space, because there's purportedly a lot of new developments potentially coming to market this fall. And what that looks like is going to be really interesting, and what kind of incentives are out there. So you want to sign up to the LiveWire to keep your finger on that pulse. You also get stats, different types of stats, sales ratios. If you want to dig into a submarket or a certain price band in a submarket, we got you covered over at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. We also have, of course, tried and true private client services.
Yeah, Matt. And if you are not using PCS to search for real estate in the Lower Mainland, you are standing still while the rest of us power walk by. You get sold prices, days on market. You basically get realtor level information for free. It's available at your fingertips over at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. Sign up. Best time to be monitoring the market. Honestly, is supply going to continue to increase this fall at a record pace? Are we going to see more inventory?
Will it be absorbed?
Or will it be absorbed? There's one easy way to know what's happening in your area of interest. Follow on PCS. It's the best way to do it. And also, I just want to give a shout out to last week's episode, because we've had some positive feedback on Derek Fenton's episode from Zentera Developments. A lot of insights into the Valley, really strong episode. So if you didn't listen to last week, circle back.
Absolutely. Yeah, that was fantastic. It was great having Derek on the show. If you want to talk about the Valley or anything else, give me a shout at 778-847-2854 or matt@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
I'm not really an expert in the Valley, but I have a good sense.
As I said it, I was thinking, call Melissa from our team. She knows the Valley very well.
She does actually know the Valley very well. But or if you want to talk about anything real estate related, give me a shout, 778-866-4574 or adam@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. Matt, we also have that Kokomo line.
Of course, info@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Well, have a great week, everyone, and we're back next week with another great episode.
Take care.
2,000 Spaces for Radio. Subscribe today.